Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Kelly Jones, Senior Counsel for Under Armour, an athletic apparel company that I'm sure all of our listeners are familiar with. It's an exciting company where a lot of interesting things are happening right now, and Ms. Jones is facilitating that with her legal work. Good to have you here with me today, Ms. Jones.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Okay. Well, to start off, could you just introduce yourself, give us a little background so that we can better get to know you?
Sure. My name is Kelly Jones, as you said. I'm a senior counsel here at Under Armour in Baltimore. Prior to Under Armour, I've been an athlete and a sports fan for most of my life. I swam in high school and college. I swam for Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. I went to law school down here in D.C. at George Washington University. I took an in-house job straight out of law school at Octagon, which is a sports agency, and worked in-house for them for about 6 years before coming over to Under Armour. At Octagon, I worked on a number of athlete deals, advocating for the agency and the athlete side. And then since moving over to Under Armour, I've sort of jumped sides of the table and now represent companies in their agreements with athletes, as well as Under Armour in its agreements with colleges and universities, grassroots events, sponsorships, and different things like that.
Okay. Well, yeah, sounds like a very full career. So far, I mean, it's not full. I'm sure there's much more to come.
Much more to come, yes.
Did you know in going to law school that your plan was to work in a sports-related legal field?
No, actually, prior to going to law school, I worked for 2 years in government and was thinking that I would probably come back and work in government. Being in D.C., that's a pretty common career path for folks. So in one of my internships in law school, I was actually interning for a Homeland Security consulting company. But as a part of that job, I did some pro bono work with the president of the company on behalf of the Women's Sports Foundation and made some connections to various sports industry people through that, which is how I became familiar with Octagon. And when I was looking for a job post-law school and studying for the bar, Octagon was looking for an entry-level legal position, and I applied for it and got it. So I didn't think I would be lucky enough to get a job in sports, but I feel like I've been very lucky and had a few doors open for me at the right time. So instead of that career I had in mind of becoming a lobbyist, I was instead able and lucky enough to get a job in sports. So I'm very grateful for that.
Okay, yeah, that's great. And then just to clarify, I know you explained this earlier, but in your time with Octagon, I think most people are familiar with that company and people associate it, you know, it's a sports agency, but you weren't an agent there, right?
Correct.
There's a lot of other stuff going on there besides just being a sports agent.
Yes, exactly. So I was in-house counsel with their legal department. You know, we draft endorsement agreements and appearance agreements, licensing agreements, video games, autograph signings, anything you could probably think of that an athlete is involved in. But also we did corporate work for Octagon as a company. So employment agreements and all the transactions that are involved in being a corporate entity, we worked on those as well.
Okay. Yeah. So, in any corporation, whether it's a sports agency, an apparel company, a sports league or whatever, there's legal work that needs to be done. So I mean, that's just an opportunity for you to get started in the industry. And then you've continued working on the legal side with Under Armour as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's important to keep in mind that, you know, sports law as a profession is really just various aspects of other types of law in the context of the business of sports. So at Under Armour, you know, I'm a contracts attorney that works on sports marketing deals, but we have several other contracts attorneys that work on many, many other types of contracts. And we also have lawyers that do things ranging from employment to trademarks to patents to product safety and compliance, corporate social responsibility, connected fitness, anything that really the business does. Someone in the legal department has trained themselves to become an expert on that topic.
Okay, well, great. Well, yeah, we're here today to talk about morals clauses. That's a specific legal issue that you've had to encounter in your career. Contracts that professional athletes sign tend to have these morals clauses. So can you give us a brief overview of what exactly is a morals clause?
Sure. So a morals clause is a contractual provision. It's usually contained in the termination language of a contract, and it's generally written such that if the athlete commits an act that the company views as negatively impacting the brand, meaning whatever the athlete did, the brand's association with that athlete could be negatively affected by consumers or the public, the clause typically allows for the company to terminate the agreement. So that's a general summary of what a morals clause is.
Right, and I think people are familiar with that and understand that principle. You know, an athlete, to throw out an example, O.J. Simpson, you know, I'm sure was a popular endorser of products before his lawsuit. And then afterwards, I'm sure was much less in demand for being an endorser of products. And so companies want to protect themselves in case a drastic change in a sports figure or an entertainment figure's popularity happens.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes. And, you know, as a brand, you're paying an athlete to serve as an ambassador for your brand. And if the person no longer is a good ambassador for your brand, then you need to protect the company and protect the relationship.
Okay, right. So you've been negotiating morals clauses from different seats at the bargaining table on behalf of the athlete with Octagon and on behalf of the company that's being represented by athletes with Under Armour.
Yes.
So I imagine that the different parties have different goals at this bargaining table.
Yes, absolutely.
So can you explain a little bit about that? What does an athlete want versus a company that's being represented?
Sure. So I think in a perfect world for an athlete, they don't want a morals clause in the contract. You know, reason being that I'm an athlete and I'm performing on the field and what I do off the field should be of no concern to the brand. What I do on the field will be regulated by my team and my league. And so it's not up to the brand to regulate that. What a company wants is a very vague and broad definition of what an athlete could do to trigger this morals clause. And the company wants complete flexibility to make a decision regarding whether an athlete continues to be a good representative of the brand. So I think in a perfect world, that's kind of one side versus the other side. I think in reality, how it works now is that most companies aren't going to enter into an agreement with an athlete without a morals clause. So in the athlete's interest, the athlete will want to make sure that it's narrowly tailored to certain acts or types of acts just so they can plan for it. And it's not something that's going to be used pretextually by a company to just get out of a bad deal. So if I'm an athlete and I'm just not performing the way the company thought I would be, or the way the company was paying me in anticipation of me performing the way they thought I was going to be, and let's say my playing time's reduced or I got hurt or I said something that, you know, in private that a friend shared online, like I want to make sure that those aren't situations that the company could terminate a long-term deal with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's a valid concern. But on behalf of the athlete, they don't want to just have this open-ended clause that the company can use at any time to terminate their partnership just because they're unhappy, ostensibly with some behavior off the field. But it could be, in fact, the company's worried that they're not performing up to where they were supposed to be performing.
Exactly. Or the athlete doesn't want the company to say a year from now, like, oh, we signed this guy, but I wish we had signed this other guy because he's doing better. And it would be really easy to get out of the contract. Let's say it's a morals clause issue, but it's really just so we can get a better deal with a different partner. You know, those are the concerns on the athlete side. Generally, as a company, we're resistant to making changes to the morals clause, but reasonable asks on the part of the athlete, like putting in that the decision would be made in the reasonable discretion of company, meaning like, reasonable is a legal term. So, you know, the company won't make the decision without using reasonable discretion versus sole and absolute discretion or something like that. Or athletes have asked for a time period. So you can terminate under this clause, but you have to do so within 30 days of learning of the incident or something like that, because at least that way they're not stringing it along and 9 months from now decide they have a bad deal. And so they're like, oh, remember when you had that small indiscretion? Now we want to terminate. So I think companies are open to some reasonable qualifiers on that clause, but I think in general, you know, the companies try to keep it as broad as possible.
Okay, and practically, it sounds like these big companies tend to have almost a form morals clause that they just say, okay, here's our morals clause, sign it. And so am I understanding that correctly, that the company tends to have broader negotiating power at the table here to say, here's what the clause is, sign it?
I think nowadays that's true, because I think given the expansion of exposure to athletes and celebrities, meaning social media primarily, but just athletes can't hide really anymore, and so much of what they do and say and wear is out there for everyone to see and comment on and share. And so I think companies have more leverage now just because of the many ways that an athlete can be kind of in the public eye.
Okay. And one other thing that has to do with this. So say an athlete violates, a vague morals clause. Does that mean he's automatically terminated? Or it sounds like more the company can choose to terminate it at will. And maybe in some cases there's a balancing of whether it's worth it to keep an athlete or something like that.
Yeah. So the way I explain this to our business is that, you know, we're going to try to write this in a way that's the most flexible for Under Armour and gives us all the rights that we want contractually. You know, do we have a right to terminate an athlete for morals clause issue? Yes. Will we? I don't know, to be honest. I think it's all determined on a case-by-case basis. And I think, quite honestly, you know, brands really value their relationships with their partners. And if a decision like this were to arise, I think that there would be a lot of decision makers involved in the process, from sports marketing to product to, you know, very high level decision makers at a very senior level, because it's not a decision that a company would take lightly. So I think contractually, yeah, you know, most of the time we could trigger this and be okay legally, but practically and in reality, I think it's always a case-by-case decision, and there would always be a number of decision makers involved in whether to actually exercise the right or not.
Yeah, and that makes sense. There's a whole lot of other factors going into deciding whether it's worth it to exercise a morals clause or not, even when it potentially could be exercised.
Exactly. And I, you know, my position is always, like, as the lawyer, I always defer to the business at the end of the day, and I wouldn't want the contract language to take this decision out of their hands, meaning that we wouldn't have the right to terminate.
Right, exactly. You want to set the table, provide them the option of doing
exactly.
It, and then, yeah, business people can decide that.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Well, as we're getting close to the end here, could you give us any real-world examples of morals clauses being either used or potentially being able to have been used in sports?
Yeah, I think the one that jumps out at me that was in the news a little bit is the Rashard Mendenhall case with HanesBrand. That's actually really one of the only kind of lawsuits, I think, that has arisen over this morals clause issue. And in that instance, the athlete had been tweeting some things about, I think it was about 9/11, that the company viewed as detrimental, you know, based on the relationship they had with the athlete. And they terminated under the morals clause, and the athlete sued them for wrongful termination under the contract. And the parties eventually settled, which I think, to be fair, most of these cases, if there is a termination right, maybe the parties exercise it immediately and the athlete says, okay, fair enough. Maybe they argue about it and settle and we never hear about it. Or maybe the company says, you know what, we have 6 months left on the deal, let's just ride it out and not renew. You know, so I think that's why, though everyone talks a lot about morals clauses, I think that's probably why we don't see much by way of litigation on it, because I think the parties work it out. But, you know, there's been a lot of incidents in the news where morals clauses could certainly be discussed and have been discussed and possibly have been triggered I think at the end of the day, it's up to the athlete to kind of manage the public relations and apologize. I think the American public is pretty forgiving. And then
right. The
brand will kind of react to that. And I think that's probably what's most often happening now.
Yeah, definitely seen lots of public apologies by athletes and things like that, and redemption stories as well, because
exactly.
athletes having much success afterwards.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for taking the time out of your day to record this podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on, and hope to see you again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend Lieb Montoya for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIBMontoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.